The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Kathleen Martin's amazing life as the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, the first scientifically investigated case of alien abduction, sent her on a lifelong search for the answers. Her personal struggle with the unknown has carried her through the twists, turns, and glimpses of mysterious realities. Until now, she has concealed her knowledge because certain powers threaten to stand in her way. Not only has she explored her own paranormal experiences, but she has also talked to thousands of UFO contact experiencers. Worked on three major studies with them, and became an advocate for these greatly ridiculed people. She gained access to files that reveal remarkable evidence of the government's secret interest in communicating with our non-human visitors. Most fascinating, she and a team of researchers carried out a multi-year communication experiment in search of answers to their many questions on why extraterrestrials are visiting our planet and how long they have been here. Her latest book is Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. Catherine was on the show about 3 years. Now she informs me it was 5 years ago, but it's been a while. And but we're fortunate to have her back with us today. Welcome, Kathleen.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back with you.
You sure it was 5 years?
Well, you wrote to me that it was 2020.
2020?
Yes.
Yeah, I wrote down here 3 years ago, but not.
Oh.
Okay, so it's been 5 years. Well, people are able to go to my archives and see when you were last.
That would be interesting. I'll have to check that myself.
Then they can send me an email, say, Dave, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, they can send me one saying, Kathleen, you had that wrong.
Has this become a contest?
Not for me. I'm not a competitive person.
Kathleen, I'm so glad anyway that you're back on the show.
And thanks.
If you would, tell our listeners about your latest book, Forbidden Knowledge.
Well, I have two editions of Forbidden Knowledge, and I love to write. And so I was contemplating what I wanted my next book to be about. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why not write about my own life? Sort of a memoir of my experiences, my work, my relationship with my aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, the hitchhiker effect, that if that is what it was, and also my work with the Mutual UFO Network, my work with the Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation, and the three studies that I've worked on with nearly 5,000 experiencers, two of those with PhD scientists. I've just completed number four now, and with 1,000 more participants, and we have a PhD statistician who has indicated that he is interested in working on this with us to analyze our results. So we're very excited about that. And the first book, let me say, is more spiritually oriented. Okay. It's more my spiritual journey, my experiences, etc. The second book is more professionally oriented, my professional career, my steps along the way regarding research and investigation, the offices that I held for the Mutual UFO Network, 20 years of volunteerism at a national level, 10 years as the director of field investigator training, 10 years as the founder and director of their experiencer research team, which is now their experiencer resource team. So there was so much to write about, plus my relationship with my Aunt Betty, with Bud Hopkins, with various other researchers. And so there's a lot of information and a lot of, I think, very interesting information for people who are interested in knowing more about ET contact phenomena. Mm-hmm. The statistics regarding the commonalities that experiencers of ET contact share, and also a study that was held once a month for 2 years with an experiencer who claimed that he was having contact and communication with extraterrestrial beings. I worked with a team of researchers, and our objective was to find out if this man was hoaxing, if he was delusional, if this was real, was there any scientific evidence to back up this statement? And so we worked with him, and we did have skeptics on that team. We had a very good investigator who had all kinds of equipment to measure the temperature in various parts of the room, for example, and on bodies in the room, on purported ETs in the room that were not visible, but who we could feel through a very strong tingling sensation in our bodies when they were present.
Did you say you had instruments to tell the heat?
Yes.
Temperature?
Yes, a laser thermometer for that.
Oh.
Yeah, we also brought in a tri-field meter to try to measure an electromagnetic field. And we were not able to get high readings on that. Mm. We found high readings on that on the bodies of experiencers who have been taken to craft, but not on the purported entities that were in the room. But we had some very interesting experiences. We were able to ask 120 questions over that period of time and to obtain answers from these individuals who called themselves the Council of Eight, who claimed that they were from a variety of different types of ETs from different places who mostly traveled in space now. There were two types of grays. There was an avian type, a mantis type, a tall white,
small gray?
Pardon me?
Small gray?
There was a small gray and a taller gray.
Okay.
The two types of grays. There was no reptilian represented. Although they said that they had invited reptilians, they were not interested in following the rules that were established by this group, which makes a lot of sense.
I was going to say that sounds a lot like what I've experienced from abductees, that the
Yes.
reptilians just are renegades.
They are, yeah. They don't want to obey anyone's rules. They want free rein to do whatever they wish. But two members were Nordic types.
Okay. Now, do you believe, it would just be an opinion, maybe, or maybe you'd know, but the Nordic types, do you believe that it's possible that the Nordics started our race as humans?
I think there's a good possibility of that. I've had various responses on the different studies that we've worked on, and also from the Council of Eight, where the Council of Eight actually said, "We planted your seed here." And that was the Nordic type who was speaking when he said that. I have worked on an extraordinarily important case in an investigation that I did. It was an independent investigation. It was also investigated by North Carolina MUFON, by the director of that state, and it was a true unknown. We had evidence, video evidence of non-humans coming into the environment, and very, very interesting. Now, in terms of the information that these Nordic type non-humans gave to one of the three people who were abducted and taken to Kraft, she was told that they had lived here at one time in the past, and that this was a civilization here on Earth that had developed the ability to travel into space, and that they had had a huge problem on this planet. And so a group of them left our planet, and they traveled through our galaxy to a nearby star system. And there was a planet, it was a binary star system. There was a planet on that star system that they call Adela, I believe it was. And that they lived in sort of twilight all the time there. They didn't have the day and night the way that we do. It doesn't sound like a very happy existence to me.
Kind of like Alaska.
Right. Like, yeah. So, but they did live there, and they said that now they mostly, this group anyway, travels through space, and that they jump through time and space in these craft. And if they were telling the truth, they took these three individuals to a space station. I did separate hypnosis, using the quantum healing hypnosis technique combined with forensic hypnosis, which is the type of hypnosis that does not lead a person, does not ask a lot of questions. You're attempting to get to the truth. It used to be admissible in a court of law until hypnosis came under ridicule and question by the academic community. But they were taken into different areas of the craft through different portals. They were absorbed into a blue light. They had conscious recall for the blue light. They were found themselves in There was a large round room with pods, and they were placed into these pods where they lost consciousness, but the pods were extraordinarily comfortable to be in. And the next thing they knew, they were at some kind of space station or a different planet, or they weren't sure. Maybe even a different part of this planet that we live on now. But there was no vegetation. And there was a station there. Sort of, you could see through it. It was almost like the fluorescent lighting, say in Las Vegas, you know, the signs,
right.
That type of lighting and tubes and connectors and lots and lots of entities inside this place. The one of the experiencers, one who was communicating with Nordic types, two men, two women, Nordic types, told her that they had known her through all lifetimes. They told her that they lived at a higher vibrational frequency than we do, and that they had to put her into the pod because the human body was not able to tolerate space travel.
Okay.
And that they had taken her many times. She thought, I mean, she was a ghost researcher. And she was also a very well-educated woman. She had been in charge of all the theses in a medical research facility for her professional career. She had two master's degrees and very articulate. And she had, as a hobby, been a ghost investigator. She had a ghost box. She'd done a couple of films on the research that she was doing with her.
Can you give her name?
Her name is Pam Nance. Yes, Pam, she gave Nance. gave me permission. Okay. And you can actually go to her website at PamelaNance.com. And she has a lot of information there.
Well, I was going to say, not to interrupt you. In fact, let me get a word in here just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, your host, and we're speaking with Kathleen Martin, investigator and author. And once again, I'm sure you're tired of being told this or have it in announced as you're being interviewed, but the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. So, back to this now. You mentioned the spirits, ghosts, and what have you, and people that claim to have been on other planets. I've been binge-watching the old TV series Ghost Inside My Child.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Have you seen that?
I've never heard of it.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Go to Tubi, and you can watch that free. Ghost Inside My Child. And it's about people whose children claim to have been born and or lived another life, died in another life. And they research, the parents, of course, they think, well, this is a kid's imagination. And enough information was gathered so that they could pretty much prove that this person existed and died the way this child said he died, or she died. And I guess my question is, it seems to be, and in other words, very compelling evidence of reincarnation. And I started thinking, maybe some souls on Earth were once in a mortal coil on some other planet. And are there any participants in your group or that you've talked to that claim to have been extraterrestrial in a previous lifetime?
There, I was a past life regression hypnotist as well, doing quantum healing hypnosis, and also a student of Dolores Cannon regarding this past life regression. And so I have regressed individuals who lived on another planet.
Okay.
Not many. Also, I've regressed individuals who were in contact with these non-humans in a previous lifetime and continue to have contact in this lifetime. So,
I often
that's sort of...
I often mention Matt Frazier on my show. He's a psychic medium. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Matt Frazier?
No, I'm not familiar with him.
Okay, he's darn good. I met him in person, and I'm proud to call him a friend of mine. And he and his wife. At any rate, I asked him to be on my show, and he said he would. And then he started thinking, this, you know, he speaks to spirits that are connected to you, let's say. You bring these spirits with you, and he speaks to them and relays whatever message. And he doesn't know anybody that has been claimed to have been another in another lifetime, or anyone who claims to be an abductee or contactee. So he said, I don't think I'd be a good fit for your show. Well, I think it was a good way to worm out of it, but
well, there is an overlap in all of these phenomena. There seems to be some kind of connection between those, and Ray Hernandez has spoken at great length and written at great length about this. He was the founder of the Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation. And one of the founders. And so you'll see he has a wheel with all of these things being connected. And the ETs, he said, showed him this wheel of these connected phenomena.
A wheel of connected phenomena. We're talking about not only UFOs, but ghosts and past lives, etc.
Yes, all of these things that are interdimensional. That sort of thing. I don't have his book in front of me, or I would read it off to you. Those various connections.
I forget who it was that said they had spoken to Mr. Rich. Help me here. What's his first name?
Not Richard Dolan.
No. But at any rate, he said he was asked, how do they get here from there? And Ben Rich, that's who it was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Okay.
And he, Mr. Rich said, I don't know how does ESP work? And he responded, all points of time and space exist simultaneously.
So if they merge simultaneously, this is our physics. It's explainable in our physics. It is only that we don't have full understanding of that. And I've been listening to some top scientists who say that everything that these ET craft are doing that look so remarkable to us are explainable using our physical laws. The only thing is that they are so far advanced ahead of us that we think that it's impossible. And the example that he used was we, by our knowledge, our level of knowledge, believe that these craft that can stop on a dime and make rapid right-hand turns would turn a human body into spaghetti sauce, I think was the example he used.
A grease spot on the wall, right?
Right. But he said that there's an explanation for that. They have the ability to slow down time. So that what looks rapid to us is actually a very slow movement to them inside that craft. So, I mean, that's coming from an advanced physicist, so a PhD level physicist. So we have to consider that, that this is not some kind of magic. You know, and any technology that is sufficiently advanced looks like magic to us.
Right.
But there is a logical, scientific explanation for this. And I think that it's important for us to remember this. Now, regarding ghosts, why is it improbable to believe that the human spirit lives on? That we are only so many pounds of meat, and that there's nothing beyond that meat, that it all dies, it all decays, that consciousness does not survive the death of the physical body. Well, consciousness studies indicate that we do survive the death of the human body. I mean, all religions talk about this, that you're going to go elsewhere. There is a tremendous amount of information regarding deceased family members or deceased good friends who come back to visit their loved ones, either through being physical in their appearance, semi-transparent in their appearance or translucent, but you can still see their form and their features. You might be able to smell their scent or the scent of the cologne they were wearing. They might leave a gift for you. They might move something on your counter. I even have a friend whose grandfather lived with them, and every night before bed, he would open the cabinet, take out a shot glass, and have a shot of I don't know, whiskey or whatever before he went to bed. And after he died, the family witnessed that door opening and the shot glass coming down onto the counter. There's just so much evidence, anecdotal and scientific.
Was that a one-time occurrence, or did that happen all the time?
One-time occurrence.
Okay.
Sometimes people hear their telepathically the voices, though. They hear the voices of their deceased family members as if they're there speaking to them or calling their name.
Yeah, this Matt Frazier says when he was a kid, he felt like the little boy from Sixth Sense. You know, these people would come and spirits would come and talk to him, and he was very frightened by it. And then finally got a handle on it and said, hey, this is the way it is.
To me, it's a gift if you understand it, that your family, someone you love, is making their presence known to you, is coming to speak to you. Now, I've known people of certain religions who believe that if anyone comes back, that they are a demon. And so they have rebuked these loving family members who have come back to them. And I think that's so sad that you cannot embrace that loved one, that deceased family member. Sometimes they come back in orbs, and there'll be a glowing orb in front of you, and they might speak to you as well.
I have a picture on my desk right now. I'm looking at it right now. This shaft of light. I was playing with my camera, just testing it out. You know, it takes picture by itself. You click, click, and then you can run in front of the camera and get your own picture in 10 seconds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I was testing it out, and this picture came up with a shaft of light.
And not you?
Huh?
Did it take a picture of you too?
No, no.
No, just a shaft of light.
Just a shaft of light.
What color was the shaft?
White.
White, okay.
And I tried to debunk it, but a shaft of light that bends,
mm-hmm.
which light does not. And all kinds of things. I could go into all kinds of things where I tried to debunk it. So I took a pic. I took this picture. I went on a cruise with this Matt Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
And I handed him the picture. I said, "What, if anything, is this?" And he looked at it, studied it for a couple of minutes, and then he said, "That is a spirit energy." He says, "I don't know if it's your wife or not, but it's spirit energy."
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, my wife has passed. And I keep, I'm sure that's her. So mm-hmm. I keep that picture on my desk.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. And isn't that wonderful that she would come to visit you?
Yeah, very shortly after she passed, we have a lamp on the side of the bed. That
mm-hmm.
touch it, and the light comes on.
Yes.
She started playing with that light just to say hello, you know?
You know, I'm laughing because that happened to me.
Really?
I was very close to my maternal grandmother, and she was in a nursing home, and I'd built a new house, and she really wanted to see my house.
Mm-hmm.
And then she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go up to my bedroom every night, and I would read for a while before I went to bed. So I'd have the light on my nightstand.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, I'd be reading and the light would turn off. And then I'd have to put it back on, turn off again. And I said to my husband, you know, there's a problem with this lamp. You're going to have to put in new wiring for me. So he did that. And even with the new wiring, it was doing that.
Yeah.
And so I had things from my grandmother in that bedroom. I had a beautiful braided rug that she had made. It was shades of pastel coral and blue and absolutely gorgeous. And her hat, she used to love to wear hats with a feather in them. And so I had a hat. I had a number of things that belonged to her.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, I just sensed that it was her letting me know that she was there. So I acknowledged her presence and I spoke to her. And I said, "Oh, I'm so glad that you are able to come and visit me and see my home. I really appreciate it. But I'm trying to read. So will you please keep my light on instead of turning it off when you come to visit me?" And I never had a problem with it again.
You know, I was just going to say, after I acknowledged the fact that that was Laura, my wife,
mm-hmm.
Touching that light, putting it up, as three stages, and it would go up. It would go up again, then off. After I acknowledged, "Yes, dear, I know you're here, okay?" It stopped doing it.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't the light bulb, wasn't the wiring, but it was spirit energy.
Yes.
So
yes.
Anyway, I better take a moment again to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM Making Waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Kathleen Martin. Kathleen Martin. Talking about UFOs and abductees and spirit communication, you name it, the paranormal is on the plate. But you had told me in email that you are active in Danny Sheehan's new Paradigm Institute.
Yes.
Danny was on this show when it was a local TV show.
Mm-hmm.
But tell our listeners who Danny Sheehan is, and a little bit about his latest project.
Well, he is a constitutional lawyer, very famous. He's worked on some famous cases, and he even worked for President Jimmy Carter. He received a clearance in order to go into UFO archives and to get classified information to give to Jimmy Carter. And so he has had a long-term interest in advocacy regarding the disclosure of UFOs and ET contact. And he has formed this New Paradigm Institute. Now you can just go there and visit, or you can become a contributing member, which I decided to do. So there are different levels. You can start as low as $5 a month and go up to that. And it's all tax deductible. So you can go there, and he keeps you apprised of the latest information regarding UFOs, whistleblowers, what's going on in the government, advocacy for the continuation of the Congressional Committee's study of UAPs and that sort of thing. So I think it's very important to support this organization, but also the amount of reliable information that you receive, because there's a whole lot of information out there, and some of it is just off the rails, and some of it is highly reliable. Well, this is a site that is highly reliable. It's backed up by evidence. He's a constitutional lawyer who takes the government to task, who takes the Pentagon to task when he needs to, the intelligence agencies who are covering this up. And so he's a very active advocate and organizer of this group for transparency, but also to have disclosure, which is not catastrophic, which essentially means that we reveal the presence of extraterrestrials to our planet before they reveal their own presence, and we have catastrophic disclosure.
That's
So,
probably, they say, they claim that they're going to have a false flag
invasion.
invasion,
Yes.
and they're going to blame it on the extraterrestrials when actually it's us killing our own people. You believe that?
Yes.
I believe that.
Yeah, I mean th that there are people who have been predicting this, that Rich Dolan is a big one of the first ones who talked about a false flag invasion, and it was based upon, I think, if my memory is correct, but some documents that he had received that mentioned that as a possibility. But and then some people are saying that all the drones that were in the news in December and January earlier this month were actually maybe a false flag invasion that failed, because I mean nobody went off the rails about that. People accepted it. They were calling it drones, but we know that they were seen entering the ocean, coming up out of the ocean, that they did not have a heat signature, that they were moving like what we think of as extraterrestrial craft. But then a man who actually spoke at a panel at Danny Sheehan's group, and as a member, I have access to these panel discussions. I've actually been on one of the panel discussions. But Rich Hoffman, who was one of the speakers on the last panel discussion that I attended, was a military contractor. And he stated that they were all ours, that this was part of some kind of military operation, these drones, and that we now have this anti-gravity ability, the ability to come in and out of the ocean, the ability to not have a heat signature, the ability to use some kind of radar to actually see into buildings, into people's homes, and that this was all supposedly some kind of exercise looking for just a low-grade nuclear device.
Oh, wow.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if this was disinformation because of a security clearance or if it's the truth, but I'm just repeating the statements that I've heard, you know, as the result of going to this panel discussion, because I was a member of the New Paradigm Institute.
Right. Well, it would seem if these were drones, you know, like hobbyist drones or whatever, no matter whose drones they were, they could take them out of the sky. We could take them out of the sky.
We certainly could.
And we could follow them and see where they're going, where they're going and where they have come from.
And yes.
I cannot buy the drone theory.
Right.
For that reason.
Well, we do have a lot of military capability, and maybe some of it was a military exercise. It was coming from military arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the craft was coming from there. But there is other craft I really question what is coming in and out of the ocean without even making a splash belongs to us. I seriously doubt that it does.
The Pentagon has stated that these unknowns are not our technology. So they're either Chinese, Russian, or quote unquote other, whatever other means.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope they're other, because I would hate to think that China or Russia have that kind of technology.
I would hate to think that too. I mean, that means that they could very easily invade us and control our country.
That's it.
You know, and so why haven't they? If they have that technology, why haven't they already done it?
Really? I had mentioned in the introduction that you have concealed some knowledge because of certain, quote-unquote, certain powers that threaten to stand in your way. Can you elaborate on that?
I can.
Will you elaborate?
The power of disinformation. You know, back in January of 1953, the CIA-funded Robertson Panel established a directive on how UFOs and reporters of UFO incidents, alien, they didn't talk about alien abduction back then or ET contact, but they certainly, that is the biggest threat to them because there's nothing that they can do about it.
Right.
They can't protect people.
Right.
But so what they do is they threaten people's lives. They make people sick. Paint people to appear to be mentally ill and that sort of thing. So I remained silent for many, many years because I had a profession.
Right.
I'm a well-educated person. I had a career. I had to support myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they could take all of that away from me.
Mm-hmm.
They could completely destroy me through bullying. And they've done that to other people. I know that they've done that. I know what they did to my Aunt Betty Hill. It's in my book, Captured, The Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience.
Mm-hmm.
And having worked with nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, who had a very long history of having done research regarding the government cover-up, I had a great deal of information that made me make the decision that I was not going to reveal certain things. I have revealed those things.
Tell me. Tell our listeners.
In my book. My personal experiences. And you'll read about that in my book. I'm an experiencer advocate. I founded MUFON's experiencer research team. I've done and worked with PhD social scientists on surveys, on studies, on experiencers. So everything that I have done has been sort of in opposition to what the military and industrial complex and the military intelligence organization supports. They used to go on television. They'd always pull out debunkers who would just, I would tell the truth, and they would just lie about me. Mm-hmm. And that stopped for about 10 years. I was very pleased because I could, you know, I've done 62 television shows now. Mm-hmm. And I could, for about 10 years, just state the facts. I could present the evidence, and it played out to the public the way it is. But then, within the past couple of years, I was on a show where they pulled out what they did was I did an interview about one topic. They used my words, but it was on a show about a completely different topic. And then they pulled out someone who claimed to be a retired NSA agent who said publicly, Kathleen Martin doesn't know what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I knew what I was talking about, but it didn't pertain to that show.
How long ago was that?
Oh, gosh, it must have been 2 or 3 years ago.
It would seem that within that amount of time, you know, of late, people are taking this more seriously.
Yeah, I think that people have.
It's because of the people like yourself who are coming forward and saying, here's the truth, you know.
Yes.
But have you ever been approached or threatened to stay quiet about this knowledge?
Absolutely. And I have, I actually did a survey among both experiencers who have become high profile, and also researchers, especially abduction, ET contact researchers. Mm-hmm. Out of 20 that I contacted, and this was just a, you know, just sort of anecdotal study, 19 had been.
Had been what?
Had been threatened.
Give us an example. What happened specifically to you? Who approached you? What did they say?
Well, it happened more than once. The last time it happened, they said, you will not work in this field again. If you try to work, we will find you. We will discredit you. We will attack your family. We will attack you. And then at the end, one backed up, and the other one was wearing, I didn't even know he was there, a gas mask and rubber gloves, and he dumped something on top of my head. And I became so sick that I was out of commission for a year and a half. Mm. I ended up in the hospital. I was at home with nursing care and physical therapy for 2 months. So I was unable to work in this field for an extended period of time.
Do you know who these guys were?
I don't know their names. I have an inkling of who they are. When I work now, I work with a bodyguard. I won't speak I won't speak live with unless I have protection.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be caught. They need to be prosecuted.
Yeah, Linda Moulton Howe has a bodyguard. I met her, had her on, like I say, when this show was a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I asked her to, for an interview. She said, okay. And then when I met her at a MUFON convention, I walked up to her, and this guy was standing next to her, and he like perked up like a dog waiting to attack. And I had to introduce myself really quick, you know. Oh, yes. Yeah, okay, I know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy kind of relaxed. But, yeah, she had to have bodyguard.
I had one at the MUFON Symposium last July. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It is
unfortunate that in this country, where we allegedly have the freedom of expression, our lives are being threatened. And, you know, I'm at a much more lower level than like Lou Elizondo and David Grush and the other high-ranking government officials and retired military officers who are coming forward with the truth and having their lives threatened.
Yeah, well, that kind of proves something to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried because all I do is give a platform for people like you and others to come forward and state the truth. The only mm-hmm. thing I got was my family's UFO sighting, close encounter sighting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and my sister and I were both abducted. That I know. Mm-hmm. But don't know anything else other than what I read, what you tell me, what others of, in the field tell me. And after a while, you know, so many people, my mother used to tell me, if 10 people tell you you're drunk, you better lay down whether you think you are or not. So if all these people say virtually the same thing, you better believe them because it's the truth.
Yeah. And, you know, they are terrified of hybrids. And for some reason, they have this erroneous accusation that I'm a hybrid. I am not a hybrid. I am not. I'm 100% human. And,
only a hybrid would deny it like that. I'm teasing you.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, that's one accusation that was made against me. And it was like, these people are crazy.
Yeah.
Where are they coming from? And I don't know if the ones that have attacked me or threatened me are from the government or just these disinformant groups, these uncivilized people who just go around being bullies. I don't know that.
I think the answer is the former. I think they are from a government that we think is our government,
mm-hmm.
but really not. Not mm-hmm. the government that is pulling the strings, you know, and the puppeteers, shall I say.
Mm-hmm.
What do I know? But after a while, you put things together and you come up with the answers. You come up with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So how long has your own personal experiences been going on?
Probably since I was a little girl.
Really?
My first conscious memory was when I was 17 years old. And my Aunt Betty was working with a team of scientists attempting to call in craft to land on my grandparents' farm. I grew up across the street mm-hmm. from my grandparents' farm. In that time frame, many, many UFOs were observed, reported in southeastern New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
the area that I lived in. They were landing in our neighbors' yards, close-up sightings to many, many people in the area where the incident at Exeter occurred. There was a landing in my grandparents' yard. There were two individuals who witnessed the craft coming in. It left physical trace evidence on the ground. And what I thought I would never tell anybody, I was going to take this to my grave, as my mother did, is that she and I remembered being taken to the craft that night. And they took tissue samples, and I was terrified. I remembered that. It had a big impact on my life. It sort of changed me. I was really outgoing. I was on the student council in high school, very, very popular. And it just made me a quieter kind of person, more introspective, frightened.
So do you remember this consciously? Do you remember this abduction?
I had conscious recall, yes.
Oh.
Yeah. And
pretty rare, really.
Yeah, yeah. And then later, through hypnosis, I recalled that they said that they were taking tissue samples to check my body for toxicity, which didn't make any sense to me at the time. But then later, downhill or uphill from where I lived, there was a Superfund site. We didn't know it when I was growing up there. We just knew that the odor was awful. We were wondering what they were doing at this barrel factory. They would be burning out chemicals on the inside of these barrels, and the air would be filled in gray and filled with this terrible odor. My mother wouldn't let us go out to play on the days where this was coming down. We later found out that they were washing them out in the stream that fed the lake near where I lived. It went into the groundwater, of course. So, it makes sense now.
These aliens, whoever they are, really had our best interests at heart. Am I correct?
Yes, yes. They absolutely did. They didn't mean to harm me, but I was terrified because I didn't understand.
Yeah, right. So where can our listeners go to find out more about your work?
Well, you can go to my website, which I have just updated, and it's www.Kathleen, K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N, just as you can see on the screen, -Marden, MARDEN.com. All of my books are there, and a DVD as well. If you want to purchase an autographed copy, you can do so there as long as you live in the United States. Things are also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other book sites. You can read about Betty and Barney. There's a lot of information I've put on there, and documents. I have an archive there. You can read the two of the three studies that I've worked on. I have recently posted as well. So there's an awful lot of information, also essays that I've written. You can read about a detailed history of my personal life.
Kathleen Marden, I want to thank you so much for joining us on We Are Not Alone.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.